culture, politics, literature, food, entertainment, current events, opinions, conversations, relationships. This is Breadbox Media, and these are the topics we cover. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome. I am your host on Dr. Michelle Live. You're on Dr. Michelle Live with me today, as you are every day. I'm so happy. I'm so grateful that you're here with me. We're talking about tying ourselves in knots yesterday, and I want to continue that because once a knot, man, it can just get tighter and tighter and tighter, and we've all felt it. You have felt so many times in your life where you turned your head in one direction and then had to do a double take in the other direction. What the heck? I thought we were on the same page. Isn't that a familiar feeling? I know it is. I know it is. You go to your family event and you just know, no. I'm not going to be embarrassed. This will be different this time. How you wait for your parents to be different and you're 55 years old. You wait for your spouse to not embarrass you in public or throw you under the bus in public, and it doesn't happen. And you don't think you're waiting. You don't let yourself bring it into the living room of your mind to open up and have a thing, because the you that you would invite into your own mind would say, so what the heck are you doing? How long do you think you got to wait? Did it change last time? And you would say, well, no. Would you like more tea? And then you would answer yourself, okay, so it didn't change last time. How about the time before that? Well, no. Well, how about the time they told you it would change? Did it change? Well, for a little while it did. And then what happened? And you'll sit there for a minute and you'll get a look on your face. And you'll say, well, then they went back to being the same way. They threw me under the bus. And then you'll ask yourself, after you take a sip of your own tea, you'll ask yourself in the living room of your mind, you'll ask yourself, well, what can I do? How can I make it change? And you will sit there, take a sip of your tea, and you'll say, you can't. The only knot you can untie is your own. The only thing you can change is you. And then you pass the cookies to yourself and you say, well, wait a minute. If I can change, why can't he change? Or why can't my mother change? You take a little bite of cookie and you say, well, they can. But it's up to them. There's nothing you can do, say, think, be, feel to make them do that. Well, if that's the case for them, you say, then what makes me think I can change? If they are have that power within them and they have, they're 30 years older than I am or 20 years older than I am, or we've been married for 25 years and they haven't been able to change despite all their desire to change, what makes me think I can change? It certainly doesn't give me any hope for me. And look at all my friends and look at all the people around me. Nobody changes. We all are pretty much the same way we've been. And then you sit there and you ponder for a minute. You say, well, you know what? Yes, it's true. There are certain characteristics of you, your ability to trust, how you view certain things that pretty much are developed before the age of 5. How much control did you have over those things? Well, none. Okay, so those are the tools we have to work with. But those things in you develop before the age of five. Those things in everyone else develop before the age of five. And then you say to yourself, so then it really is hopeless. And you feel your stomach and your chest and your throat getting knottier and knottier, right? Those knots tied a little bit more. Like, wait a minute, we're just getting tied in knots. I'm getting all mixed up here. I'm like in that web. What are you even talking about then? Why are we having this conversation? Get out of my mind. I'm going to go distract myself now. I want to go to shop on Amazon, or I want to go see porn, or I want to go and take a drink, or I want to go exercise until I can't think anymore. Or I want to go do something harmless, nothing bad. Doesn't have to be addiction. Doesn't have to be those things, those other things. It can be something nice. And then you say, well, wait a minute, you invited me into this living room and I'm not done with my cookie and I'm not done with my tea. Let's talk about this a while. Let's open up some possibilities. Let's open up the curtain here. Let's open up the window here. Let's look at that picture window. And then you do, and you see that it's all foggy outside. And then you say, well, let's just wait here a minute. Just keep looking. You'll see a figure there. You'll see a figure out there in the fog. And then you can go on and on that way to the point where you begin to understand that the mystery is in that you have no control and you have all the control. You cannot control what anyone else does. And you look at the fog in your life. How many times have you done that? You start thinking about it and it just kind of like, ugh. You just get, you know, I don't want to deal with this anymore. Because it seems ridiculous. It seems hopeless. It seems old news. It seems like you've hashed it around a million times. Well, the new you that you're inviting in your living room, the one that's armed with the idea that, wait a minute, did you ever see this big wad of knots? You feel it every time you try to say something and you hope for something different, but you know it's not going to be that way. You feel it, you know, kind of like tightening in your chest every time that you have a Christmas dinner or a Thanksgiving dinner or an Easter egg hunt, and you know someone's going to drink a little too much, and you hope it's not going to happen this time. They really have been going to those AA meetings they said they were going to, and then all of a sudden they've gone from denying they were alcoholic to be doing something about it, which you're so excited, and then they deny that they were even in denial. It goes into this weird circular thing to where all you can do is have your little brain tied up in knots. So I'm here to tell you, in the you that is in the living room of your own brain, is here to tell you that it's a series of just untying knots. Patience, one at a time, starting at the right place, with a little help from our friends. And our little help from our friends, who are those are our number one, Our Lady Undoer of Knots is a good place to start, but also our therapist, our objective, our separate set of fingers that can help us, our different set of eyes that can help us, our doctors, our friends. And then you be your own anthropologist. You be your own anthropologist as you're conducting your day. If you hear people all over the place saying to you, you look too frazzled, you seem too frazzled, or you're too scattered, or you're too this, or you're too that. Well, that's not for them necessarily to point out. Depends on how they're pointing out that to you. You may not be any of those things. You just have lived up to that image. However, if you've lived up to that image and you're defining yourself that way, start watching yourself. You don't have to stay that way. Your brain is a very malleable, plastic thing. Plastic meaning moldable, changing. Plastic in its original intent is, and I'll have to look up the etymology because I love etymology. You know, where did it come from? What was the word, the root of plastic? But I do know that part of plasticity means flexibility, means changing, means moldability without breaking. That's what plastic was all about. It could withstand lots and lots of stuff, but it was very flexible and could be molded and shaped and used. and not break when it hits the ground. That's what we want to be. We want to be plastic. And it kind of reminds you of something, right? What does it remind you of? A baby. A baby. Not just the baby's brain, but the whole baby. When you're a baby, you're so plastic, it's ridiculous. Your brain, in fact, you have to be, moms have to be careful with putting those bands around the heads, because the brain is cased in the skull, but the skull of a baby is just a bunch of soft floating pieces. They're soft. They're not joined together. They're going to float to make room for a growing brain and a growing head and a changing face. So if you put those little bands, this is an aside, put those bands around those heads of those little girls, it's cute, but you're restricting the movement. So you don't want to do that. It's like putting a few little water lilies in your pond, and pretty soon they've choked out everything. You just don't want to do that. You want to let that little breath that you can't see, but with every breath, your brain is expanding, and your fluids are expanding, and your skull is expanding when you're a little baby. So we're very plastic when we're babies, and you've seen that's why babies can fall down and not break a hip, right? We get a little bit more rigid. We're not as plastic. However, the good news is we're way more plastic than we ever gave ourselves credit for. Our brains, I mean, we have people that are in their 80s and 90s having strokes, big strokes, that you just think, well, I'm writing those people off, and they're walking in a year. So, you know, we got a lot to learn here. So as you're in, take a stock of yourself as we go to the break, and I want you to think of, who are you inviting? What you are you inviting? Are you entertaining in the living room of your own mind, your own soul, your own heart, and your own body? Well, this is Dr. Michelle. On the other side of the break, we're going to go into breaking some of the, or untying some of these knots. We will see you on the other side of the break.
Culture, politics, literature, food, entertainment, current events, opinions, conversations, relationships. This is Breadbox Media, and these are the topics we cover. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle, and you're walking with me on Dr. Michelle Live. You can get the app, and you can stream us all the time, Breadbox Media. You can stream us. You can look at all my old archive podcasts. And I don't even like the words old archive, because all of my topics are topical. They never stop being topical. Except for maybe things like Hello Barbie, because there will and will not be a Hello Barbie in our lives. And that's just what it is. But things like bad relationships, how to raise your children, what's depression, seasonal affective disorder, anxiety, being a warrior, not letting your life get you down, having multiple marriages, being alienated from your own children, addictions. That doesn't change. The words might change, the way that's presented might change, but these are our everyday living topics. It's what helps us through our day. It's where we get hung up, these areas of the mind. And as I've said, and I will continue to say over and over and over again, I put these things together in a very different way, because I am me coming to you and with you, walking with you. So when I'm with you on this road, we have our walking clothes on. We have our yoga pants, and we have our sweatshirts, our jeans and our sweatshirts, and a pair of comfortable tennis shoes. And you get me, you know, you get not only my profession, but you get my life, my experience, what I like for breakfast. We share coffee. You'll get to know whether I put cream in it or not. I mean, that's what we're going to do, where my hangups are. Part of how I can get where your hangups are is because I'm going, yeah, I've been there. And you have probably realized in your life that you don't have to experience the exact thing someone else has experienced in order to really get it or be very aligned with them. So that when you look at something like Jesus Christ, someone like Jesus Christ and his passion and his life, well, you don't have to know what it's like to, you didn't go to some, you know, neighborhood Southern California path where there's joggers and old skateboarders and watch somebody carry a cross with other people whipping them and other knowing that he's going to be hanging there all day long and all night long until he dies. You're never going to see that, but you can certainly feel the pain and sorrow, can't you? And we trust that even though they are not in our form, and Jesus did not live in 2016. He didn't know what, you know, his people weren't inundated with flashing abs of how to get rid of belly fat, you know, and how to, the latest and greatest, don't eat this, and there's a picture of banana, and don't do this, and don't do that, because you're going to have belly fat, and what's wrong with you if belly fat? It must be gluten, it must be this, it must be that, it must be your grandmother. I mean, it's like, well, why do we have that problem? Because we sit all bent over way too much, and we don't use those abs, period. That's the only reason we have this belly fat, and it could be for noble reasons. We could be, you know, most of us are glued to our computers. That's how we work. That's a problem. So it's not the only reason, but it's a good reason. And all these other things come from that. So the point of that is that to be empathetic, you don't have to have walked in the exact shoes. There is something, especially with people who've had the extremes in life, soldiers have said many times, unless you've walked in my shoes. But they'll also add, unless you've walked in my shoes, you can't understand, and you're the only one that understands, speaking to me. And I would have to remind them, I wasn't there. You know, I was a runaway when you were doing that, or I wasn't born yet when you were doing that. But it's because I get it somehow. Whether it's the traumas in my own life, whether it's whatever, you know, it's like we connect on some level. And as that one guy said to me one time, that stranger out of nowhere, right down on in Encinitas, California, when I was coming out of the ocean with all my clothes on and all my telephones all messed up. And he just started kind of joking around, but then he looked at me and he said, people of the spirit recognize each other. And man, he was so right on. So, and that's really true. It's really true. People of the spirit recognize each other, and we come in all different shapes and sizes. I've already told you some of my best teachers are people who I would really not have any other reason to run into, except that they're the greeters at Walmart, or they are, you know, someone that happened to be walking down the street and dropped something. I mean, this is life. We learn from everything, and we are meant to learn from everything. So back to the living room of your mind and the knots that you're tied into. What I want you to get is that at first we can think of it in general. And you can say, well, I'm kind of free of knots. I'm not really tied up in knots. Yeah, I'm a little, don't like to talk in front of people, but I'm a pretty good person, and I'm pretty, you know, everything's pretty good, and I got a pretty good family. And that might be okay. But we have confession. Why? Well, we have confession to confess bad things that we did. But that's a necessary thing. And if you're Catholic, it's a necessary thing. It's a prerequisite to going to communion, and there's a reason for it, and it's a reason for looking at your sins. But what does that fully mean? And many of the church doctors and scholars, many of them ostracized in their day, talked about something more intimate, more revealing, not just a litany of everything. Let me search my head for what did I do bad. You need to get that out on the table. Now, in psychotherapy terms, it's like, again, you don't want to just sit there and go and say, yes, I went through 14 foster homes. But you need to say, yes, I went through 14 foster homes. And you need to recount some of those things. And you need to be able to put it all on the table so you can not have it cluttering up and tying you in knots with pain and sadness and an emptiness or a hole in your heart and non-understanding that actually causes you to laugh the way you laugh and approach something the way you do or be cautious the way you are, and therefore hide yourself under that bushel basket that we're not supposed to be hiding our light under. So it's a lifelong journey. The people that are out there on stage, they have their knots. Nobody's got a corner on this. People are further ahead in the road than we are. So we have to look at them. That's why I'm telling you that being open with other people, or at least sharing your experiences sometimes when it's appropriate, in the way that you can, it may just be by knitting booties or making rosaries. It may be another way, maybe being out there on stage. It might be developing a new way to do computer pages, web pages. So wherever you're being held back because the people that you've invited into your living room or who burst down the door and are taking you hostage in the living room of your mind, you need to start there. And you need to be your own anthropologist, as I said. You need to look at the living room of your mind. You need to see whether those windows are closed. You need to see where the cobwebs are. You need to see the dark corners that you're afraid of. You need to see who's sitting in the shadows, like the old X-Files with the guy and the cigarette. You need to see who's sitting on that overstuffed chair that you think is empty, but it's not really. You need to see what kind of lamp is in there. You need to see what year it came from. You need to see if it's dingy, dusty, sad, or if it's open, bright, shiny, happy, lots of light. You need to see what that living room looks like. Is it one person sitting in front of a 1950s television? What is it? Even if you didn't live in during those times, what is the living room of your mind look like? Where is it scary? Where is it okay? Are the shades open? Are there windows? Yeah, how many doors? You need to see those things, because I will tell you that when you look at those things, when you see the only way an anthropologist understands the mindset, the heart, the soul, and the spirituality of the people that once traversed the ground they're standing on, where there are no permanent structures, is by becoming an anthropologist, taking the little cues of what is there and looking at it and observing and then trying to make some kind of sense out of it. This is how that works. And how do they do that? Because they also know their people too. So they know that they have to eat, they have to get their food, there's a place they have to use the bathroom. Before there were bathrooms, there's a way they had to deal with that. There's places they had to protect their children. There's places that sick people had to go. There's places that they had to put animals and they had to get food. There's all kinds of things. There's places that they worshipped or art that they did. How did that happen? That's what you got to know about you. So when we explore this further, Our Lady Undoer of Knots, I love that I like it because it's kind of dramatic, really. It's kind of like, it kind of brings the best of everything. I love the guy's accent. I love the music that comes in there. And it's a little bit Eastern sounding, but it's a very Catholic novena. It has all of our cult. I mean, we have the cult of Mary, so to speak, but it's got these beautiful images of Mary from like all over with different phrases I can't read because it's in different languages all over the world, and you realize, wow, this really is a cool thing. But the way he, just in his litany and the things he names, it really goes to everybody, down to like clients you see or parents you had. So this is Dr. Michelle. We are walking this road together. See you on the other side of the break.
culture, politics, literature, food, entertainment, current events, opinions, conversations, relationships. This is Breadbox Media, and these are the topics we cover. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome. Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle. You are with me on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4. You can text 573-4BREAD-4, or you can always write me DM live at breadboxmedia.com. That's an email, goes directly to me. If you have a question, comment, concern, something going on in your life, anything, doesn't have to be what we've been talking about. It can be anything. Anything. A while back, had someone who was talking to me about a guy who was talking to me about being a concerned person. How do I put this? Being very concerned about the medications they were on, but come to find out it was because of a lot of anxiety revolving around estrangement from children, adult children. So there's all kinds of things that might seem like one thing, but it really leads to another. And these, again, can tie us in knots. Not that we're constantly tricked or that you're constantly clueless. It's just that we try to, you know, we try to go on with life. We try to put things in their proper perspective. I think what I would like to do is read to you a little something to kind of get us our mindset around what we're talking about here and who you are. So this is how I want us to think of ourselves today anyway, okay? This is from St. James, and I rarely open up to St. James for some reason, but here we go. This is St. James 5:13 through 20. Beloved, is anyone among you suffering? He should pray. Is anyone in good spirits? He should sing a song of praise. Is anyone among you sick? He should summon the presbyters of the church, and they should pray over him and anoint him with oil in the name of the Lord. The prayer of faith will save the sick person, and the Lord will raise him up. If he has committed any sins, he will be forgiven. Therefore, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The fervent prayer of a righteous person is very powerful. Elijah was a man like us, yet he prayed earnestly that it might not rain, and for 3 years and 6 months it didn't rain upon the land. Then Elijah prayed again, and the sky gave rain, and earth produced its fruit. My brothers and sisters, if anyone among you should stray from the truth and someone bring him back, he should know that whoever brings back a sinner from the error of his way will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins, the word of the Lord. All right, so let's dissect this a little bit. I want you to keep that in your mind. I'm going to kind of break down what I see, the living word. I'm not a biblical scholar, but let me just say what this says to me. When St. James is writing this letter, he's talking to his first line. Is anyone among you suffering? Okay, so raise your hand. Are you suffering? Are you suffering from anything? Do you have fibromyalgia? Do you have seasonal affective disorder? Do you have anxiety? Do you have lack of focus? Are you getting too fat? Are you getting too flabby? Are you losing your will? Are you losing your way? Are you suffering because you're in an insufferable job and you can't find a way out? Are you suffering because you lost your job or your house or your car's down or your dog's sick? Are you suffering because you have a mental illness? You have a lifelong depression? Are you suffering because you have a physical illness? You have a thyroid, and when it goes out, or your childhood onset, your childhood diabetic, or your type 2, your adult onset diabetic? Are you suffering? Are you suffering? Is anyone suffering? Do you feel like you just want to continue your family, but it looks like it's falling apart? Are you suffering because your child's addicted to drugs? Or your child thinks they're transgender now? Or is wondering whether they're transgender or is transgender? So, you know, every single thing I named, I know someone who feels that way. So let's go. He's talking to me. He's talking to you. So go back to your living room of your mind. Be your own anthropologist. Are you suffering? Now, don't dwell in your suffering. And don't just burden it. I know that, and I do believe in redemptive suffering. And he addresses that, but he addresses that in a very cheery way, believe it or not. So he says, if anyone is suffering, he should pray. So that's it. So, and that's why when they say pray unceasingly, it doesn't mean that you're always sitting there doing a Hail Mary, smashing your chest with your fist, and being face down prostate in front of any particular thing or any situation, or that you love suffering. They don't want you to love suffering. Christ did not say to his mother, go and suffer continually, please, because it's the only way you're going to get through all the stuff, mom. No, she said, behold your son, behold your mom. He didn't say, you know, go and suffer and sin no more. He said, take up your mat, walk, do your thing. Be fully you, be a light, 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 light. It's all about light. But you can't see the light of day. How do you do a tie-dye? Have you ever done tie-dyes? You know, you've seen them, Bob Marley, and you've seen tie-dyes. If you've ever done a tie-dye or with your kids, you know how it works. You take a white piece of cloth or any color that you want piece of cloth, and you tie it in knots. And then what do? You take that knotted up piece of material and you put it in a vat of dye. And you let it sit there and you stir it in all this hot dye for a while. And then you let it set for several minutes or hours, a day, I don't know how long. And then you take it out. You let it dry, you rinse it, you let it dry. And then it looks like you got a big clump of, let's say, purple. Say the fabric was orange, bright orange. You tie up a bunch of knots and you throw it into a big vat of purple dye. After the requisite time, it sets in. You let it go. You put in all the right ingredients. You get the right heat going. You take it out. You rinse it. But it's purple, big purple lump. When it dries, you untie the knots. When you untie the knots, what do you see? A starburst or a beautiful pattern. People make weird patterns out of it or discernible patterns out of it. So why do we do that? We do that because it makes beautiful patterns in us. But what does it show you? It shows you the places where the dye could not get because of the what? Because of the knot. So parts of you cannot be expressed because it's in a knot. You can't get the full ubiquitous color. You have a pattern because of a knot, and that pattern will show itself every time you have to present it to the world. Now, knowing that, you can do stuff about it. So what should you do if you are suffering? If you're in good spirits, you just sing and you pray. So if you're suffering, and right now you've had a lot of good things unfold for you in your life, you sing praise. I believe that you sing praise all the time, even when it doesn't feel good. You open your eyes, praise you, God, for this day. Even if it takes you a second, you can't think of it, and you make it a pattern and a habit. Let's say if you pray over your food, you start off rather than with the usual, typical prayer of the blessing of the meal, start off with, Heavenly Father, I praise you for absolutely everything that's happened to me in my life and everything that's happened to me in this day. I praise you. I praise your name. And I bless this food or whatever. I ask you to bless this food. So that's why it's important or I think that Pope Francis had the direction right a lot. Like I said yesterday, when he, way before he was Pope, when he saw this painting, he liked it in Germany, was studying. It was a coincidence, supposedly. And now that's one of his favorite devotions to Mary. and he passes it along to us. Is Mary undoer or untier of knots? So, next St. James says, is any among you sick? And then he says, you get the presbyters of the church that they should pray over you and anoint you with oil in the name of the Lord. Well, that was part of their medicine. That was part of the doctor call. That was not just, oh, you go over here for your spiritual stuff and then go over, make an appointment and go sit in a waiting room with a television set in it and give me your insurance card for the physical stuff across town or in another state, and then we'll do something over here, then we'll parse you out to all the specialists. They were tribes, and they had, as a center, they had temples. And that was like the big deal. That was the place. That was the place. And so that just wasn't a separate part of their life. So you get who you need to get. You go for the big guns when you need them, but you take all the above. And it says the prayer of faith will save the sick person, and the Lord will raise him up. And if he's committed many sins, he will be forgiven. Well, the other part of that is that we confess our sins to one another. And what does that mean? Doesn't mean that you call up and go, okay, I have a confession here. My name is Joan, and I'm going to, you know, make a confession of all my sins on the air. No, what you confess is you confess your life. You confess your faith. You confess what's happened to you, because you know what, as he says in the other part, if anyone among you should stray from the truth and someone else brings him back, the person that brings him back gets amazing rewards. Well, when you bring him back, it doesn't necessarily bring him back, force him back, and have him sit in a pew at the Catholic Church. What it means is that if you see that they're sick and you reach out to them, or they've gone the wrong way, and say, hey, buddy, I used to be there. I used to drink. I used to be depressed. I had a terrible family. I had a bunch of brokenness. And this is what I did. That's bringing someone back, because you've just given them a drink of water. We'll come back on the other side of the break. Get into this more. I am Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
Culture, politics, literature, food, entertainment, current events, opinions, conversations, relationships. This is Breadbox Media, and these are the topics we cover. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're with me on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, DM live, breadboxmedia.com, and you can get the app, the iTunes app. I mean, it will change your life. I have like a really old iPhone. I mean, it's old and it's bad, and it takes forever to even take a picture because it's just too old and I have too many pictures. But I still... Even though I have a radio, I have, I do have a CD, so I'm still very old school in my car. But what I do sometimes is I will just open up before I go to listen to something different. I love Breadbox Media, and I really do listen to it. So I'll take any one of the contributors. And sometimes, just because I like their voice, and I'll learn something I never knew, or maybe there's a topic I like, but I can have that playing. And I don't have to listen to commercials. I don't have to listen to the news. I don't have to listen to anything. It's in under my control. I said before, what do you have control over? You have control over your app. So you can get the iTunes app, Breadbox Media. All right, so... we're coming up to our last segment. We are on our last segment, and we have one more day to really get into Mary Undoer of Knots. But I want to set the stage for this, because Mary, who is in my estimation one of the most radical women that ever existed, starting from being a radical little girl all the way through, is a radical even after her assumption. And she's radical in the way that she doesn't rest. She's all over the world. I mean, she's everywhere through generation after generation after generation. It's not just somebody who sees her face in a piece in a cheese sandwich. And I don't want to make fun of that, because sometimes I found that rock that looks like the, say, I remember, like, I put the picture up. If I had a page, I would. And that looks just like the sacred, to me, it looked like the Sacred Heart of Jesus. But for whatever reason, it hit my head that day. I didn't even think about the Sacred Heart of Jesus until I saw the rock, and I thought, oh, Sacred Heart of Jesus. And I thought, what is the Sacred Heart of Jesus? And so I started looking it up, and I started really getting into it. So, and now I'm kind of a fan. So, and then, well, what's the Immaculate Heart then? What's Mary doing next to the Sacred Heart? What's that about? So it's fun. It really is. So when we talk about Mary, undoer of knots, and here is this guy who turns out later to be Pope, who is studying in from South America, who's studying in Germany, and he just happens to see this painting, this beautiful painting of Our Lady of Mary, with this beautiful ribbon that one side of it is just perfectly untangled, and the other side is full of tangles and knots, and an angel's giving it to her. So what happens? Well, what kind of knots can she untie for you? Part of what she can do is she can, like she did for Jesus at his first miracle, she can intercede by saying, who knew? And not by throwing it in your face, but just by making the simple statement, they have no wine. And Jesus is looking at her, so what do you want me to do about it? Basically, he doesn't understand, but he doesn't want to disappoint her. That's my take anyway. He didn't want to disappoint her. He didn't want to disappoint the wedding. But he didn't, it's like, well, why do you tell me this? It's kind of like saying, shouldn't you tell someone who can do something about it? You know, shouldn't you tell it to one of the stewards or one of the vineyard people? But no. And then she just says to the stewards, do as he tells you. And then the light bulb goes off. Maybe not intellectually. Did it? I don't think so. He just turned the water into wine. Did he know he could do it before that? I really don't know. Won't you love to know? I mean, I really don't know. What was that? I mean, they went to a wedding. And listen, if I go to a wedding and my mother, God rest her soul, my mother were to say, excuse me, Michelle, they don't have any wine, I would think of that as a criticism. And I would say, well, what, really? You want me to get in the car and go get them? I can do that. I mean, what do you want? What do you want from me? You know, I probably wouldn't be quite that bad. But she knew the potential. Now, maybe she couldn't know everything. She's a human being. But somehow she went by her spirit. She didn't have the knot of, well, don't do this or don't do that, or that's not within the custom, or that's not how we do things, and you never did this before, and your sister didn't do this, and all the girls around you your age and all the other mothers around you don't do this, so what the heck are you doing? You're just going to be laughed at, or you're just overstepping your boundaries here. That's our favorite. I love that, because I use that. Like, do I have boundaries? I don't have good ones sometimes. And what do we have always trying to teach people? Set up your boundaries. So, you know, in those days, I'm sure they had the equivalent. There's just too much going on here. So when we look, and I'm going to put up again to this, if you like it, I mean, to me, I like the drama, but there's others there's something for everybody. It is Walmart out there, I'm telling you. It's a Walmart world, and not in all this shadiness and sketchiness, but in the way that if you want mascara, man, you get the kind that works for you. If you want hair color, just have 2 hours in your day so you can start looking if you want this kind of golden brown or that kind of bright platinum blonde or this. There's like 20,000 of the same color. So the same with our novenas. If you need a speed novena, we got those. If you want the ones that play on, like, I like the speed novenas. I've told you, that's why I do the Infinite Prague. It's an express novena. I did it every night before dinner for 4 years, and my prayers were answered. And I still do it because it's such an awesome prayer. However, this Mary Untire Undoer of Knots, when it was introduced to me, I actually got the pamphlet in it, and it was like, okay, yeah, I saw the picture, but it didn't catch me somehow. And that was last year when this priest, Father Lineback, told me about it. And he said, I recommend this for you, because we were talking about my life. He said, oh, looks like you got some knots here. So a year later, as I'm and really looking at that little rock with the sacred, I know I'm going to sound in my last 5 minutes like I'm really off the charts, but in seeing that rock, getting me interested in the Sacred Heart of Mary, I'm a Sacred Heart of Jesus, and then seeing the YouTubes trying to discover what the Sacred Heart of Jesus was, there over the side was this really bright colored picture, and I wanted to see what that was, and it was a novena to a Mary Undoer of Knots. I saw that it was an hour, had no interest in it. However, just the other day, when it was reintroduced to me again, or it came into my head about Mary Undoer of Knots, I get on YouTube, try to find it, download it, and I'm listening to it for 30 minutes. And I'm not just listening, I'm starting to say it with them. And I'm starting to have visions in my own head, and not visions, but thoughts in my own head about, yeah, you know, when he says, maybe coworkers, or maybe, you know, a knot of, you know, a mother or father or a friend or in your own life or of your own sin or whatever it is, little pictures would come up in my head of where those knots are. And when you undo those, that's when you can re-dye your cloth and be the color that you're supposed to be. Because that bright, although it might be interesting and fun to have these little bright patterns, they usually are because they're not growing. They're not growing the way they need to grow. They're not seeing the light of day. They're not getting all that full, rich dye that they could get by absorption from the sun and from the Son of God, from God, from the Spirit, from wisdom, from the Comforter. If you have the wad of knots and they're only getting the part that's exposed, that's why before we go, I want you to try the exercise of who have you invited into your house? And you know what? Why don't you evict them, especially if they got their rent free? If you didn't invite them, they just happened to show up and they squatted, as people do in many places around the world, in many cities around the world. So is somebody squatting, being a squatter in your head, and you can't evict them because your own self is used against you. Well, you weren't looking, you weren't using the space, you'll have to get the courts to evict me, you'll have to do something. You can't even in California, I don't think, maybe it's this way everywhere, if you invite a family member to come live with you for a week and they decide not to stay and take a residence in your garage, you legally can't really even kick them out without some kind of a whole protocol. Even if they're taking advantage of you using your stuff and eating your food. So we want to not let that happen to us inside. We don't want those past hurts, habits, problems, irritations, tragedies, traumas. They're always going to be there. They're out there. They're not going to go away. They're not going to disappear in your memory. That's what made you. That's what I really mean. Thank you, God, for everything that's happened to me, even the stuff that I wish had never happened. But that makes me who I am right this second. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Because you don't want those. You don't want those scars to go away. You don't want to just erase them from your life, because then you would be vanilla. Well, vanilla is good, but you would be nothing. You'd be a manila envelope, basically. That would be your only color. You would be clear. You'd be nothing. You are who you are because of what you have lived. And what you have lived has recognizable elements for me and for everyone else, hence back to James, because you then with that can be the person who brings a sinner back from their error of their ways, not because you're going to chastise them or go, oh, you sinner, don't do this, but because you are going to be able to let your light shine. So be the anthropologist. Think about Our Lady Undoer of Knots. I'm going to put up that dramatic one for you, the YouTube link. We'll see you tomorrow. This is Dr. Michelle.
Culture, politics, literature, food, entertainment, current events, opinions, conversations, relationships. This is Breadbox Media, and these are the topics we cover. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.